Thank you for joining us on KHOI Community Radio. And as you may have noticed by now, we are in a fund drive mode. And during this time, it's our favorite time to bring to you some of the visionaries that live among us here in Central Iowa. So today I'd like to introduce you to Ross Roger Gipple from West Des Moines. He actually is originally from Bridgewater, Southwest Iowa. And he is with the Be Wild, Rewild Project, a loosely knit organization comprised of volunteers with a passion for wildness. The Be Wild, Rewild Project is also a fund at the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation. And I'm Ursula Rudenberg, and I'm here with environmental reporter and board member of KHOI, Patch Larbaum.
Hi, Ursula. Great to be here.
And so thank you, Mr. Gipple, for joining us and being willing to drive down from West Des Moines and share some of your thoughts with us. You are with the Be Wild, Rewild Project. Let's start out by asking you a little bit about what that is. There are kind of three basic structural questions that hold together the people in this organization and the search that they're on for understanding. Would you share with us what the questions are that you are trying to address?
Yes. The first question is, what do you, we mean by wild? The second question, what lifestyle changes are needed for us to live within the bounds of sustainability? And the third question, how can we create a wilder, more beautiful, more biologically diverse, and a more enduring Mississippi River watershed?
So let's go through those questions a little bit, one by one, for deeper understanding. The first question is kind of a fundamental question of what are we talking about, right? Can you talk a little bit about that question? What is wild? What do we mean by wild?
Right. That's a difficult question for most people to address, and I've been asking it for many years, and I have not gotten a lot of answers. But my mentor was Gary Snyder, and so when I think about wild, I think of self-reliant, spontaneous, self-willed, self-regulating. Sometimes I add local, authentic, and free.
Those are the words that embody what you're asking about, what you're looking for?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's talk about the second question, which is more about the journey itself, right, the process. It's a question about process?
Right, that question, what lifestyle changes are needed for us to live within the bounds of sustainability? Well, there are two fears that dominate human behavior. One is the fear of not being in control, and the other is the fear of never having enough. And so I think in terms of lifestyle changes, we start by learning to trust and to be trustworthy.
You see them as happening at the same time.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you see that as the essence of the lifestyle change that needs to happen?
I believe trust is fundamental to our getting along with one another in our own species, but I think it's also fundamental to getting along with otherness, non-human otherness.
Can you talk a little bit about that? About what trust means there?
Well, trust is the opposite of fear, and fear is the big motivator. And so when I say the twin fears, the fear of not being in control, that's why we have war. That's why we have so much bitterness in our politics. Everyone's fighting for control. And the reason why they're fighting for control is because they're afraid. And the other fear is the fear of not having enough. And so we're always struggling to get more of what we really don't need to be happy. And as a result of that, we live in a world full of conflict and consumption. And it's digging us into a really deep hole, and it's destroying not only non-human otherness, but it's ultimately going to destroy humans as well.
So I could imagine one could ask, what does that have to do with the first definitions you gave us of wildness? And am I hearing you correctly in that you're saying that that trust is what allows you to connect with those things and to experience things in a new way that includes them?
I would say that that wildness is a manifestation of trust, and domestication is a manifestation of fear. So that,
say that again. That's
I would say that wildness is a manifestation of trust, and domestication is a manifestation of fear.
Okay.
So to the extent that I'm willing to not care, to be indifferent, to never mind, or to trust you, to trust what you're doing, you will be able to develop to your fullest potential. And I will be free of caring about that. But to the extent that I try to impose my will upon you, to the extent that I have a predetermined idea about how you should behave or about how the landscape or any part of the landscape should behave, I enslave myself to that expectation for outcome. At the same time, I enslave you and the otherness that surrounds me.
So the antithesis of trust is the attempt to control.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And through domestication of animals, you seem to be saying that it addresses the fear. We have fear, so if we domesticate, if we can control these animals in such a way that they can provide us wealth or food or warmth, it addresses that need to not live in fear, apparently. So in an agricultural state, you know, there you seem to have kind of hit upon one of the paradigms of how we walk through this Iowa beautiful land. And it would seem that you're advocating essentially more trust.
Right, and it isn't just in agriculture. You go to New York City and they're just as determined to control and consume in New York City as we are out here. Yeah. Humans are the great domesticators. Yeah. And, you know, in the process of domesticating the world around us, we've gained a lot. But a lot has been lost. Yeah. And so one of the things that I've tried to do for many years is to encourage a conversation about what have we gained and what have we lost. And you look at Iowa, as Mark Edwards would say, the most biologically altered state. 2/3 of our land is growing corn and soybeans. We've straightened the rivers. We drained the wetlands. We plowed the prairie. We built roads every mile. We're building windmills everywhere now. In my home county, there's 530-some already still building. And so we have been absolutely determined to control every aspect of the world that surrounds us, not only the non-human world, but we're determined to control other humans. And so there we are engaged in continuous war. But it's not just the war abroad. It's the way we relate to one another. The idea that we're so fearful of how another person might act or what they might do, that we're trying to control other humans. James Carse would say that the attempt to control nature is at its heart the attempt to control other persons.
Okay, so let's talk for a minute about the third question, which is really about, in my mind, it's a vision, you know, the vision of where, what could be possible, having to define first question is kind of defining a new way of looking at things. The second question is the process, in a sense. And for me, the third question I experience is where we could be heading. So let's talk about that for a minute.
Well, we could start by asking, what are we doing with what we're producing on those millions of acres that are in corn and soybeans? And most of it is going into the bellies of domestic animals. Another large part of it is being used to fuel motor vehicles. And so to the extent that consumers would change their eating habits and their traveling habits, we would not need that many acres of corn and soybeans. And we could take the steep slopes and the floodplains. They're the highest risk parts of the agricultural landscape, and also the ones that cause some of the greatest damage in terms of water quality and soil erosion and nutrient loss. We could take those areas and return them to the wild. We could allow them to become woodland, wetland, and prairie. And to some extent, we could restore them. We could guide that process. And at some point, we would move from the restoration process to the rewilding process. And Wildlands Network talks about reconnect, restore, rewild. Well, reconnect is taking what habitat exists, what wild places exist, and connecting them with corridors so there can be a movement between those habitats. In Iowa, we not only need the corridors, but we need to create larger core habitat areas so we can allow for cougars and wolves and bears to breed and live in those habitat areas, those large core habitat areas. Then we need the corridors to connect them, and those corridors could follow the rivers. And
we have a lot of rivers,
mm-hmm. And the large habitat areas could exist along the steep slopes and the floodplains, the least productive areas of the landscape in terms of agriculture. So I'm not advocating the destruction of agriculture. In fact, I'm part of agriculture. I've made my living in and around the farming business. And so what my idea is that we've overstepped the bounds. We need to retreat a bit, give a little bit back, allow a few rivers to run wild, allow apex predators and keystone species to return to this state. This was once one of the most biologically diverse places in the world. Now, as Mark Edwards says, it's one of the most altered. But it will rewild itself. In 30 years on landscape that I've observed, amazing changes have taken place with very little management or interaction from humans. It's a matter, again, of trusting wildness.
And we're speaking with Roger Gipple, with the Be Wild Rewild Project, which is a loosely knit organization of volunteers who have a passion for wildness. And Mr. Gipple is laying out his vision, which you're defining not really as in conflict with our agricultural state, but as a balance, as a vision that provides balance in an area that you see has lost its balance.
Right. Agriculture and the urban communities have a big problem right now that reveals itself in the Gulf of Mexico, the dead zone.
Very much so, yes.
And that's traceable. So we know where that problem originates, and we're going to have to deal with it.
We're part of that problem.
Mm-hmm. And if you look at the cities, a lot of it's about consumption. And you can't blame the farmer for raising corn and soybeans and pigs and chickens if the people in the city want to buy that. If that's how they want to spend their dollars, the farmer's going to react. But if the consumer decided they wanted a different way of living, if we could create a low-input, sustainable, larger culture then I believe that agriculture producers would respond spontaneously with a low-input, sustainable agriculture. So I think consumers can lead the way. I think government, academia, and consumers have got to lead the way. And then I believe the farmers – agriculture has a history of being spontaneously adaptable. And I think it will prove that it can do that.
So you're reaching for that hidden infrastructure called culture, which really is the most powerful motivator of change, right?
Absolutely. Fred Kirschman, from the first time I met him years ago, has been talking about a cultural change.
And he was the director of the Leopold Center.
Absolutely, yes.
Here at Iowa State
University. A major cultural change is what we need. And that means people are going to have to quit pointing fingers at other people. They're going to have to look at their own lifestyle. It means we're going to be less mobile, less people in product mobility. It means we're going to change our diets. It means families are going to be local again. We're not going to be able to have our families spread all over the world. So I believe we need to look at local family, local community, local education, local food, local government.
Pat's looking at me and thinking local.
Local radio.
Local radio. Absolutely.
So if you could keep that, if you could hold that thought, please.
Yeah, let's take.
This is an astounding conversation. We are so fortunate to have you join us here in the studios of KHOI. This is our membership time of year. This is the type of programming that we're striving for. This is the type of programming you won't hear in a lot of other media outlets other than right here in community radio. So your presence just brings it all, Roger Ross Gipple. And if the listener can respond to this call for nature that you're – and realizing that community radio has a place, if you could go to our website, khoifm.org, and learn about becoming a member. If you're a member, learn about sharing that news with your family and friends and neighbors and throughout the community. We have to make an effort as being a non-commercial station. And we have an open-door policy here at 410 Douglas, right across from the Octagon, or you can call.
Okay, we'll be back. We'll be back in a minute. I'm going to take a brief break here.
Tiempo no tiene cuenta. Tiempo no tiene cuenta, tiempo no tiene cuenta, presencia. Claro como un cristal, puro como el agua, fuerte como el fuego. Presencia, medicina, ayúdame a estar presente. Medicina, ayúdame a estar presente aquí y ahora en todo lo que hago, aquí y ahora en todo lo que amo. No ayer, no mañana, estoy aquí. No ayer, no mañana, estoy aquí. No en el futuro, no en el futuro. la luna y el sol.
Nice music.
Nice music. And this is Ursula Rudenberg here with Mr. Pat Schlarbaum, our environmental expert at KHOI. And we're speaking with Mr. Ross Roger Gipple from West Des Moines, originally from Bridgewater, southwestern Iowa. And Mr. Gipple is with the Be Wild, Rewild Project, which is a loosely knit organization of volunteers with a passion for wildness. And that's what we're talking about today with Mr. Gipple, his vision. We like during the fun drive time to speak with visionaries because it's all about the future, right, Pat?
Oh, and we need to keep these airways flowing. This is the type of programming that community radio strengthens our community through this sort of communication. And going to the website, khoifm.org. is so essential during these fund drives. We need to increase our membership. Please consider being at the annual rate of $60. That's $5 a month. Or just over $20 a month, you can be a sustaining member. And I think sustainability is what we're all striving for, not only at the radio station, but throughout our everyday lives. And if you are a member, please consider sharing this news with your family members, your neighbors, your church members, anybody that you come in contact with. We need to start the buzz that community radio is really providing a powerful service to the airways of Central Iowa.
Thank you. And thank you, Mr. Gipple, for joining us today. Before the break, we were talking about the vision behind the Be Wild, Rewild project. And I was wondering if we could just loop back for a minute here and talk about you. And you're a person who describes himself as 1 foot in town and 1 foot on the land. So tell us what you've learned from being on the land.
Well, on April 15th of 1943,
all right,
I was born and the DNR transported two breeding pair of white-tailed deer from Ledges State Park to my home county of Adair. And I can tell you, growing up, I lived in a pretty unwild county. There were animals on the land. The ravines were not as we know them today. They were grazed, heavily grazed, and eroding. And I often tell people that In important ways to me, Iowa is a wilder place now than it was in 1943.
If you saw a deer in the 40s, it's quite often it made the newspaper. There were like 500 deer in Iowa during the 1930s before the work to bring them back. So it sounds like your area got some of those bring them back white-tailed deer.
We have a lot of them now. Another thing that happened, the animals went into the big buildings. The farm animals went into the big buildings. And agriculture abandoned land that had previously pastured a lot of animals. I mean, all kinds of animals were out there, not just cattle. Our farm animals were running around the farm. And so when the animals went into the big buildings, we had something happen in Iowa that was similar to what happened in New England when agriculture abandoned New England. The places where we could not graze corn and soybeans or make hay began to rewild themselves. And no one was paying any attention. And then all of a sudden, people realized 20, 30 years later, these were beautiful places. And so they wanted to go there. And they wanted to build houses there. And so that's what's going on now. Iowa's tried to rewild itself as agriculture abandoned it, and now the city, the urban people, are moving out there and building country estates. We don't put a high enough value on these places that are self-regulating, these places that are wild. I noted in the fall survey of the Iowa Realtors Land Institute, I believe they had high quality cropland at about 10,000 an acre and woodland at about 2,500 an acre. And I thought that might be backwards, or at least we could say that they're worth the same. There's a lot – I mean, we have two-thirds of the state in corn and soybeans, and how much woods do we have? How much wetland do we have? How much grass, native grassland do we have? So what is really valuable? What is valuable is what is scarce.
Pat, you want to jump
well,
in?
Well, the scarcity of prairie, you know, there has been a lot of the county conservation boards learned about prairie plantings in the 70s and 80s. Not so much in the 60s. There was the soil bank era, if you recall, where set aside acres. And it was trying to limit production. But I remember the soil bank areas being what you're describing, is where the Henslow sparrows and quail and bobolinks would start to repopulate where previously it had been row crop. And then I think there was enough inside interest for those keystone species that you mentioned, the ones that find these wild areas and building upon that. So the county conservation boards went to recovering prairie, which had been about 99% erased. I don't know where we're at now. It's probably a few percentage points. But those are some of the large block areas that you're referring to. And by our estimation, a large block area would be a bird conservation area with a core of 2,000 acres. It seems to be the current recipe for this type of recovery, with a core area of public land that would not be inundated with agriculture or the housing developments. But the associated 10,000 acres adjoining that, you generally in agriculture control, and there's the Conservation Reserve Program, and there are federal programs now that are providing some funding, wish there was more, to assist those farmers in the set-aside of those highly erodible bank or steep areas that are not agriculture. And where I'm going with this is that you have witnessed a change in the landscape, and the reference to New England is so applicable because they went through the small farm and growth and development that kind of took them away from the land. And it seemed like your arguments are to bringing people not only back to the land, but how to live on the land sustainably. So often in these, when you say people come back to the woodlands, which we've had a lot of woodland interest, but yeah, they become the housing developments. And so often they'll seem like they'll doze out the woods and leave the names like Oak Street and Elm Street. And they put the names, but they take out the trees to do it. Mm-hmm. How does rewilding, how would you like to project this rewilding focus into something that's a bit more livable for the areas that you have passion for, these areas that have potential to return to wildness?
Well, you mentioned conservation. Excuse me, Ursula.
Before we get into kind of the bigger vision of where to go, I just wanted to interject one real quick question. Yeah. I'm wondering if you could share something with us about, I mean, you're describing this essentially at heart a cultural, it starts with a cultural shift. And I do want to get back to your question, Pat, but before we get there, I'm wondering if you could share with us how you, as the son of a Southwest Iowa boy, you know, culture, how did this shift happen in you? Like, what was it about your life or what you saw or experienced that connected you with what you're talking about?
Yeah, right there with the deer when you mentioned.
What happened with
well,
you?
Well, growing up in a town of 225 people, we lived about two blocks from Main Street and a block from the edge of town. My uncles were farmers. One of my uncles had an implement dealership and a grain elevator. So I grew up, and my dad worked in the elevator, so I grew up around a grain elevator, an implement dealership, farms, the grocery store, carried newspapers, mowed lawns, had 1 foot in town and 1 foot in the country. There was a man in Bridgewater named Emil Glade who lived across the street from where I grew up, who had the hog buying station. And when other men took me to the country, to the woods, we always went there to extract something. We were hunting or animals or picking up walnuts or looking for mushrooms or doing something. Emil Glade used to take me to his woods, and we would walk, and we would sit by a tree and talk. And we never took anything home with us. And sometimes we wouldn't even talk. Sometimes we'd just sit there and think and look. And so Emil Glade got me thinking a little differently about going to the woods, going to the wild areas. So I think that was an important time.
What was he doing? What do you think he was trying to do?
I'm not sure he was trying to do anything but just enjoy the day. And
he was just being himself.
I happened to be along with him. And Emil Glade owned a farm, so we spent a lot of time spraying weeds and cutting weeds and trying to control nature on the farm, doing all the things farmers have to do. But when we went to his woods, we were not trying to control anything.
Well,
we were letting go.
What an amazing perception that he shared with you.
And he never ever said that to me. He never verbalized it. Mm-hmm. But I think back and I realize that's what was going on.
Yeah, and I think that's something a lot of us can relate to just in snippets. You know, that moment that many of us have had being in the forest somewhere, even here in Iowa, and suddenly just taking away an internal thing, a richness that comes from just being there, right?
During the 80s, there was a lot of change in Iowa. Land dropped in value by 2/3. Farm equipment values dropped. Interest rates went from something like 8 to 18%. It was a devastating time. And I was going through some personal things too, divorce and real setback financially. So I may have started thinking a little differently at that time and being a little more open to new ideas. And I recall when I was on the land observing the animals we were raising, the cattle and the hogs, and realizing that we were trying to control what was happening there just like we were in the cornfield. And then I would observe the wild animals, and I realized that we didn't have to worry about them. I mean, to the extent that they were damaging something. But basically, they were self-reliant, spontaneous, self-willed, self-regulating. And we were not enslaved by them, and they were not enslaved by us. But the cattle and the hogs, and you could say the corn and the soybeans, had enslaved us as we had enslaved them. And I'm not advocating that we can give up all that, but humans have over-domesticated the world around us. We have been so full of fear that we're trying to control everything. And so it's not a good thing for us, because at the heart of what we're talking about is liberation, not only for ourselves, but for otherness. So, you know, I would want you to be free, just as I would want to be free. And only by trusting and being trustworthy can we do that. And so when you say, well, domestic animals and motor vehicles are causing, through the consumer and through what that consumption forces the farmer to do to meet the demands of the marketplace, that's ravaging the landscape. And so what would be an alternative? Well, maybe we wouldn't eat as much meat, but maybe people who did want to eat meat could eat wild meat. And maybe there would be artisan hunters who would know how to kill and dress and probably even cook a wild animal, and they would be compensated for that. And the restaurants and the grocery stores would feature wild meat. And I think I've read that going around the world in most countries, bushmeat is a premium to the domestic raised meat, but not here. We think that poor people should eat wild meat here and rich people should eat domesticated animals. So we can change our lifestyle and we can still have a good life. There's a lot of room for us to live well and to allow otherness to prosper also.
Okay, we're speaking with Mr. Ross Roger Gipple, and we'll be back in a minute.
Yeah. Do you remember maybe? And we're listening to a special program here on KHOI, a special fund drive program. And we'd love to bring in people during this time who have visions for the future, because fund drives are all about the vision for the future as well. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, and I'm here with Mr. Pat Schlarbaum and Roger Ross Gipple from West Des Moines. Yeah, a true leader in our conservation world. This is the type of programming that KHOI needs to feature to provide our listeners insights into this community. We're trying to provide that service. And we also are seeking funding at this critical juncture of our creation. It's been a great 8 years, but now it's all about sustainability. And by going to our website, khoifm.org, you will find information there on how to donate, become a member. If you are a member, please consider sharing that news with your family, friends, and church members and around your community. But one of the things that really is a powerful statement is when you walk through the front door and meet some of the volunteer staff here that are welcoming you at 410 Douglas right across from the Octagon.
Yeah, and I see two of them right now. And you know what they're doing, Pat?
Yeah.
They're writing thank you letters to people who've donated to KHOI.
Yeah, there's a lot of volunteer efforts that you would join right in. Please consider that. But enjoy the surroundings. This Pantorium building has a little bit of history and its transition to what it is providing the Ames community now is nothing short of remarkable. It's just astounding. So please consider becoming a member and go to the website, khoifm.org. Your support is dearly appreciated. From the heart.
From the heart. Thank you. Yeah. And we're here with a very special guest today, Mr. Roger Ross Gippel, who drove up from Des Moines, West Des Moines, to be on KHOI. And we're very appreciative that you came, Mr. Gippel. I've got three names to choose from. I'm going to go with Roger right now. Roger, you are with the Be Wild, Rewild Project. And this is really about a passion for wildness. This is also a special fund at the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation. Before we went to a musical break, we just started to head in the direction I'd like to spend the rest of the hour speaking about, which is what is the big vision for you before you were speaking about the kind of understanding that the balance of domesticated land and wildlife has been lost with what could be wild and what has that trust and that freedom in it. And let's talk a little bit about what could be possible, where we could go. Pat kind of brought this up too. What is the vision for what we could do, not only with Iowa, but the whole talk a little bit first about the ecosystem that we're in, the Mississippi watershed. Let's start with that.
Yes, and the third question is how can we create a wilder, more beautiful, more biologically diverse, and a more enduring Mississippi River watershed?
And which we is a wonderful sentence.
Yes.
I love that sentence.
We can do that by trusting wildness. We can do that by restoring natural systems, woodland, wetland, and prairie. We're losing 5.5 tons of topsoil per acre per year in Iowa, and we're creating problems all the way downstream, all the way to the Gulf of Mexico, where there is a dead zone. These natural systems can go a long way towards solving those problems. If we'll step back a bit and not raise quite so many corn and soybeans and probably not have quite so many domestic animals and maybe not need quite so much fuel for our motor vehicles, we can have apex predators and keystone species coming back into this state. We can have wooded hillsides and grass hillsides protecting water quality and reducing soil loss. And these natural systems don't cost very much. It's a technology that's been proven over many, many years. And right now we're looking at the Green New Deal, which has a lot of really expensive solutions that may or may not even work. But we know that woodland, wetland, and prairie works. And so the vision, an important part of the vision for rewilding the Mississippi River watershed is returning natural systems.
Now, in the Be Wild, Rewild project, you've been working to, in a sense, bring the Mississippi watershed into focus so that we're more aware of that. Talk to us for a few minutes about what exactly or what area of land are we talking about? What is that?
Okay, well, years ago when we started working with Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation, we were talking about wild Iowa discovery. And that's as far as we thought. And in more recent years, we realized that rewilding can't stop at the county line and can't stop at the state line. It can't stop at the boundary of the nation. It has to be one continuous effort towards rewilding. And so we reached out to an organization called Wildlands Network, hoping they would come here and lead us through this process of rewilding. And we were not successful in that effort. So about a year ago, it dawned on us that we were going to have to do this ourselves.
Have to do it ourselves.
Yes. We were going to have to save ourselves from the ravages of domestication. And so out of that came the Be Wild, Rewild project. And we have a group Facebook page called Rewilding Iowa and Beyond that has 400 members. We have a website. You can reach it either by going to Be Wild, Rewild, Googling Be Wild, Rewild, or Big River Connectivity. It'll take you to the same place. And we have this special fund at the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation, which has been offering community art gathering grants to people who will find creative ways to address those three questions. And we've done, I believe now we've had 14 of them accepted. Yesterday we accepted a proposal from Living History Farms. And those are all on our website. There's also a place on our website we call the forum for people to make commentary and reply to commentaries. So we're working through this. We're volunteers who don't know what we're doing, and we're trying to make a difference and trying to get people to think about being more trusting and more trustworthy.
Now, I know there was a story with a cougar in Des Moines that kind of helped the thinking along. Tell us about the story of the cougar in Des Moines.
You mean the school at Capitol View when we brought the artist in?
No, the cougar that was trying to travel.
Oh, actually a live cougar.
A live cougar,
okay,
yeah.
Well, that's something that's regularly happening, and cougars are moving through here all the time, and they're moving through the country and the cities. And what often happens is they get shot.
Because they come into the cities.
Right.
Yeah.
But yet there are places like Boulder, Colorado, where so many of us think we want to live. And we're afraid of cougars in Iowa or bears, but we go to Boulder, Colorado, and we think that's a great place to be. They have cougars in Boulder, and in Boulder they have bears in Boulder. They have a group of volunteers, I think called the Bear Patrol, which you're supposed to call before you call the police, so that the Bear Patrol will try and figure out another way to solve that bear problem than shooting it. We probably need a cougar patrol in Des Moines.
Mm-hmm. Now, yeah. Part of the idea is the cougar needs a path to get through that part of the land, right, without wandering into the middle of downtown Des Moines. And that's really connected to the concept of the corridors, right?
Right. The cougar is extinct in the eastern U.S. So we have cougars in the west, and they're trying to get back east. And they're coming through Nebraska. They can come on the Platte and along the Platte and the Niobrara.
So they're trying to go home.
They're trying to find their way. And when they get to Iowa, this is a pretty big barrier for them.
Why
and they're
that?
They're oftentimes, well, because we have we don't like wildness. We're terrified of the unpredictable and the unfamiliar, and we're trying to control a huge part of our state. And we don't have culturally, we're just not in Iowa. We're just not ready like they are in Boulder. We've got to change ourselves so that we can be more trusting and more tolerant. But these cougars are making their way along the rivers, and the rivers go through the cities. And then they come to a place like Des Moines, which has got to be pretty confusing and terrifying for them. And then there's the interstate highways. But this is not going to stop. Cougars are going to keep on trying to go east, and we need to work with that. If you think about one of the reasons why Wildlands Network was terrified of coming into the Midwest was because they didn't think we had any potential for rewilding. Well, look at the driftless area, parts of four states, very biodiverse area. Look at the Ozark Plateau, parts of four state. Look at the Les Hills region, parts of four state. We've got cougars and bears and wolves living in states that touch Iowa. And we have incredible potential in Iowa to create large core habitat areas. We've just completed a project we call Sheridan River Connectivity, which is a project within Big River Connectivity. And the Sheridan River Connectivity shows how you can go from the Sheridan River, where it goes into the Missouri River down in Missouri, up through to just south of Osceola, Iowa, where the Sheridan River begins. And then by doing something the Native Americans used to do, they used to go over that narrow ridgeline between the Sheridan River and the Des Moines River and hook up with Soap and Cedar Creek. We followed those creeks, and we were able to then connect over to the Des Moines River. We connected the Stevens Forest and the Shimmick Forest, and we've got habitat areas mapped down there that are 55,000 acres so they could handle multiple breeding cougars. And we've got several that are as small as 10,000. We think we need about 10,000 acre minimum to get the apex predators in here. But southern Iowa is already for what we're talking about. I mean, it's just a matter of we need a program like the WRP. And Pat mentioned the CRP earlier.
What is the CRP?
The Conservation Reserve Program. But the problem with the Conservation Reserve Program is it's a temporary program. And the government wants us to manage that land so that it can go back into cropland. So the CRP is not allowed to be wild. The WRP, Wetland Reserve Program, was a permanent easement program. So those acres are rewilding themselves. We need a program like the WRP for our steep slopes and our floodplains. And that's the way the federal government can help us solve our erosion problem and our water quality problem and our nutrient loss problem. And at the same time, create a wilder, more beautiful, more biologically diverse, and a more enduring Mississippi River watershed. That's where we need the federal government.
And what you were describing there with the Sheridan River, it ultimately enters into the Missouri River. And you mentioned the Des Moines, then it enters into the Mississippi River. So you've got a unique landscape in Lucas County and Clark County where you were describing. And I'm sure there are a lot of youth in that area that are picking up a lot of your messages. But I'd like to kind of go back to where when you mentioned the picture of the cougar, and if you could just for a few moments share what you were attempting to do when you had all the school kids get in a design of a cougar, basically.
Right. That was in 2006. Yeah. And I approached the Des Moines school system and asked them if they would consider letting us go into Capitol View Elementary, which is the largest, or it was at that time, I think it still is, elementary school in Des Moines. And it, at that time, was probably the most disadvantaged in terms of their students. It's right near the Capitol. And they agreed that we could bring Dan Dancer, who does the Art for the Sky project, to Des Moines for a week residency at Capitol View. And so he was there for the whole week. And on Thursday of that week, we went out onto the football field of East High, and 700 of us were in colored T-shirts and got down on our knees and formed a cougar. And the Des Moines Fire Department was gracious. I went to the mayor, and he offered to provide the largest hook and ladder truck they had in the fire department, and they were there. So the artist was up on top of that photographing from the air. There were two helicopters flying around. We made the national news that night. Iowa Public TV was there, and John McLaughlin, who at that time was a weather
pilot
person and a helicopter pilot, he was there. So it was really a fun day, and I think I got a letter from every one of those kids with a piece of art, you know, their vision or their version of what they thought happened that day. And incredible experience for us. I think it was the most fun project I've ever done in all the years I've been doing these things. And what we were trying to do with that cougar, it was called Sky Cougar, what we were trying to do was make the point that cougars have a place and that it is our attitude about whether or not we can allow for the unpredictable and the unfamiliar in our lives that will determine the fate of the cougar and many other wild creatures. And at the same time, it will determine the relationship we have with one another. Because what we can learn about trusting wildness in non-human otherness will help us understand one another better and how we can trust ourselves and trust the people we love.
And there were a lot of school kids that day that you touched their hearts.
Yeah.
And you kind of broke down a fear. There seemed to be some environmental education that we didn't need to fear these critters like the apex species that you're referring to, the cougars. And it created art. It was quite a day. Yeah.
It was.
Have you ever personally kind of looked through the eyes of a cougar and related to, you were talking about, you know, seeing the world through people other than ourselves. You've had a lot of time to think about the cougar.
You can't know Mark Edwards and not be challenged to do that.
What have you seen through the eyes of a cougar?
Well, you know, I'm not sure that I would see things very much differently through the eyes of a cougar than I see them through my own eyes. Because we have an awful lot in common with the cougar. We probably wouldn't want to admit it, but we have a lot in common. So
what do we have in common?
We're both trying to live. I believe the great hope of all life is to be wild, self-reliant, spontaneous, self-willed, and self-regulating. And so I think I have that hope, and I think a cougar has that hope. I believe everyone in this room has that hope. And we're all struggling just to do that. So there isn't that much difference in a frog or a cougar or a blackbird or me.
And so we turn to you listening at the radio, on the other end of the radio, and Mr. Gipple is really speaking about that hope in you, too, that wild side of you who's listening to this, right?
Right.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for joining us. We've been speaking with Roger Ross Gipple from the Be Wild, Rewild Project. We have about 2 minutes. I'm going to give you the last word here after thanking you for joining us.
Well, thank you. What I guess I would say to the listeners is to get on our Facebook page, Rewilding Iowa and Beyond. Follow the conversation there. We have an active daily conversation there. Go there. Go to our website. Google Be Wild, Rewild, or Big River Connectivity, and look that over. There's a lot of stuff on that website, and there's also a forum where you can make commentary if you want to. If you make a commentary, you have to choose an avatar, a being that you want to have represented. And take a look at that, and if you feel like it's something that interests you, join the conversation.
Okay, so an invitation to participate in this, the passion for wildness, right?
Right.
Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us. Pat, any last words?
To go right back to the start, you bring great honor to Gary Snyder.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, and people, if you want to follow some pretty good books, pretty good poetry, check out Gary Snyder. And check out this guy, Roger Ross Gipple, Iowan.
And the website again?
Be Wild, Rewild, or Big River Connectivity, either one.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, thank you. And this has been a special program here on KHOI during a fun drive week. Fun drive time, more than a week, unfortunately. But we appreciate you being with us this afternoon, and please stay tuned.